man, it feels good to be a bad guy. Telling stories that bring the underworld to life. Gangsters, mobsters, hustlers, monsters, stars of the conversation as we sip on our libations. So come and share some laughs, it's true crime with a twist. Every episode's a banger, you don't want to miss.
Infamous. Welcome to Say Hello to the Bad Guy. I'm your host, Locke, and this is the podcast where we drink, smoke, and bullshit about the life of historic criminals. Now, we're talking outlaws and gangsters. We're not going to cover too many serial killers. That's just a little dark for me, and this ain't no true crime podcast. But really, you can't call this a history podcast, because I'm no historian. Just a history fan that does some research and bullshits about it with his friends. So speaking of my friends, let me introduce you to my guest host. So first with us today, we got DC.
What up, doe?
And also with us today, we got the Duke, Dan the Man.
Hey, what's happening?
Welcome back to the podcast, fellas.
Hey, absolutely. It's good to be back.
Always good to get the band back together.
Wait, I don't know if you guys can hear that, but I got a little game of fireworks happening outside.
That's always fun.
People who know from the Detroit area, it adds some authenticity to the podcast.
All right, at first it was a game called Fireworks or Gunshots, but I'm sure it was fireworks.
Is this area of the house still safe to be in?
Well, it's weird because I'm pretty sure they were shooting them out of the back of a car because they were definitely mobile. I had surround sound of celebration happening.
Firework drive.
What are they celebrating over there?
I know. It's fucking Wednesday, bro. They're excited we're back on. They're like, they're recording. He did it.
Well, you want to kick us off now that we know that you're safe? What you got to drink today?
Now that's it. Well, you know what? Going with the shooting and the hooting and hollering, I'm going with some Rebel Yell. Because it's not the midnight hour, babe. I'm crying. Mo, mo, mo.
Nice.
America.
I don't think I've had that one.
I mean, it's Kentucky straight bourbon. Ain't no fucking thrilled about it, brother. It's straight up fucking whiskey. No, it's good. I mean, it's like a classic. It's been around for a long ass time, 1849. So
nice
word.
Oh yeah, how is it? Is it good?
Yeah, I mean, you know me. I can't sit here and act like I have a good refined palate, but I mean, it's good bourbon. It's definitely not like the higher shelf style or nothing, but it's bourbon, baby. It's bourbon.
Nice.
I mean, I dig it. That's for sure.
What you got, DC?
I'm over here drinking my favorite cheap wine. Good old Trader Joe's $3 Chuck, little Merlot. So, yeah, good old cheap wine. Although, you know, as the wine prices keep going up, you know how you call stuff by the name it was, but it's not even that price anymore?
Yeah.
Yes, that's how it works.
Yeah. Well, I would say
I still think McChickens are on a dollar menu and there's no such thing as a dollar menu.
Exactly. Dollar menus don't exist anymore. Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's probably been a long time since we did this, but it'll be like a completely beer-free episode then because I had made me, we had it on the show before, but one of them Fat Elvises. So it's the UFC-sponsored Howler Head Banana Whiskey. And then I went with the old Smoky peanut butter whiskey because it's about $7 cheaper than the Screwball. State just as peanut butter-licious, you know. There's different ways you could do it. So you could just do it as a shot where you just pour like a half ounce in a shot glass and do it. Then you can do it as a cocktail where you do it over ice and shake it. I like to put like a little bit of cherry Coke in it on the top just to give a little extra whatever. But it's kind of my wrapping up the day cocktail I've been going with because I've been trying to watch the, you know, the intake. And when you're drinking beers, that can get heavy. So one nice cocktail can kind of do the trick. And it's solid enough to last you a minute, but it's still easy drinking. Look, some days you just need a couple fingers of fucking bourbon at the bottom of a glass. Sometimes you need a fancy drink.
Amen, brother. Amen.
By
brother.
Some days, you mean like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, definitely Friday, Saturday. And then you have to rest on Sunday for the work week. That's what you
hell mean. No, you got to do two on Sunday.
I'm talking shit about drinking straight whiskey. My cocktail is just two flavored whiskeys.
Yeah. I mix it up. It's banana and peanut butter. It's mixed. I put a splash of Coke in there.
That's true. That makes it mix.
DC, before we get started, you want to give us a quick update on the new podcast?
Absolutely. So Locke and I did start a new MMA podcast called Gloves and Roses. And anybody that's listened will know that was a segment on the Fatboy MMA podcast. But we really decided to go down this road and kind of hone in on really giving a lot of insight on past fighters, a lot of fights that happen, and kind of more the tradition of MMA instead of just what's going on right now, the up-to-date events. And hopefully people will go back, especially people that's new to MMA, to go back and watch some of those classic fights that, you know, they may not have been aware of or they may have heard about, but didn't really have a reason to go back and watch. Or some of the great people that you don't understand why, because by the time you watch them, they were on like a 5-fight losing streak, right? And you don't understand why they were so revered before. So we go back and we revisit a lot of those fighters and a lot of those fights and talk about it and give them their flowers. So Gloves and Roses.
Yeah, and it's really just a glimpse into what hanging out with me in DC is like, because if you want deep insight and like up to date UFC events and a breakdown of the numbers and odds and stuff like that, then yeah, you like should listen to Chael Sonnen or Ariel. There's a lot of lot better people listen to that. But if you want to hear people just randomly talk about Sean Sherk's 2006 to 2008 run, that's us.
That's
your guys.
Yeah, I was about to go, you want stats and records and stuff, you can go listen to those other nerds. But they're like, yeah, we're going to talk about the 1998 fucking Sean Strickland run and all. Like, okay, you guys are going to be nerds. It's what's going to happen. But no, that is a good concept, because that's what I always liked about the Fatboy MMA, the previous show too, is there's so many MMA shows that are just like recap of the fight you just watched, predictions for the fight you're about to see. But, it's good to go back and just talk about the general fights, go over dudes' whole career and shit. That shit is a lot more interesting to me. And as someone that has to sit around you two drunkenly talking about the shit, that's way more entertaining to hear about. Because, if you don't see the latest fight, then you're lost. I don't know. But if you're talking about whole careers and shit, it's I don't have to see every one of these fights. These guys are breaking it down big picture style.
All right. Well, before we get started, what is the link, DC?
It's links.badguypodcast.com.
And then you can just get everything from there, the TikTok, the Instagram. We got to update it. We're doing threads now. We're still keeping the X account because that's how we talk to Sean James. But outside of that, we're barely keeping it. Well, we'll go ahead and get started. And the bad guy we're covering today is William Hewlett.
This ain't negotiation time. This is Scarface, final scene, fucking bazookas under each arm. Say hello to my little friend.
Billy Hewlett.
We got William Hewlett, a.k.a. Bub.
So it turned out all this time, Wolverine was just mistaking people for William Hewlett. That's a joke for nerds, because Wolverine calls everybody Bub. Meathead, sit this one out. Nerds, that's for you.
Oh, time frame wise, I think that could almost check out, too. I think he could have spent his whole life looking for Bub.
Like Forrest Gump and Bubba. He's got a fine Bub.
Bub Hewlett was born in Virginia in 1888. That's around Wolverine's time frame when he was born, right?
Who knows? The guy regenerates. I don't know what year he was born.
It depends on which canon, but something like that.
Yeah. Which Earth are we talking about? Which dimension, bro? It's the multiverse now.
Bub Hewlett, he eventually ends up, his family moves up to New York, where he ends up settling in Harlem.
All right. It's interesting we're not getting a 5-point story. That's usually where these start.
So in the early 1900s, Harlem used to be a predominantly white neighborhood. And then how it became a black neighborhood was this dude. It was the guy that wrote the song, Lift Your Voice and Sing.
I have no idea who wrote it.
Well, whatever. He was a guy that he started reaching out to landlords and he was like, hey, you should let
the rent's too damn high.
Well, no, he was the opposite. He was like, hey, you guys are giving out good deals on rent. You could rent some of these out to black people and they'll pay extra to get to move to, like, you know, a nicer neighborhood over here or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you could rent them for more. So the guys were like, okay, well, we'll do that. And then as black families moved in, all the white family people, they moved out like right away and all moved like to the Tenderloin section and Hell's Kitchen and stuff like that. But all the shop owners and stuff dug it because they were mostly Irish dudes. And as the neighborhood became a black neighborhood, the Irish shop owners started raising their prices because they were like, well, we own all the shops. We run the neighborhood. We just raise the prices to whatever we want. And they were all making a killing. But by 1908, as it became a predominantly black neighborhood, the community started opening up their own businesses and just having regular prices. And all the Irish shop owners, they were like, fuck that. That's bullshit. And they would go to like Hell's Kitchen and the Tenderloin section, or even a lot of times just off-duty police station. A lot of them were predominantly Irish. And they would just hire them to come into the black neighborhoods of Harlem and terrorize black business owners or just anybody that wasn't supporting the Irish businesses.
Yeah, I think the movie comedy, if people hadn't seen it, Harlem Nights touched on that a little bit and kind of, you know, some of what would happen back then with some of the establishments, both legal and illegal establishments. But yeah, it's always a weird dynamic because things flip one way and it's like a lot of the bigger cities or major areas were predominantly white for obvious reasons. The black people couldn't, they were in the South in slavery, right? And as they moved to the North and start getting into areas and everything, they became more black. And then the white people moved, and now all of those same areas, all the white people are moving back in, and the black people are moving out. Even, you know, here in the Detroit area, it's the same thing, you know what I mean? So it's funny as things recycle. But, you know, I think that's a part of somewhat of the good things about progress. And, you know, as people move around more and more, I think it actually creates more stability, whether people believe it or not, some of that movement.
Yeah. It makes me think of the Temptation song, the Ball of Confusion. People moving up, people moving in.
So eventually, the black business owners get sick of all these Irish thugs coming to the neighborhood. And they're like, whoa. We got fucking thugs too, motherfuckers. So they reach out to their community and they're like, hey, we got anybody that's willing to fight off these assholes when they come into our neighborhood for money? And it gave rise to what became known as the Harlem Badmen, which was basically Harlem dudes that were willing to fight. And they would patrol the streets openly carrying bats, knives, and firearms. And they pretty much just patrol the neighborhood and thugging on other thugs that came to their neighborhood.
See, that worked out real bad. A lot of people don't know this, but for like a little while during that time, there's also the Harlem Good Boys, and they were going out and their slogan was hugs, not thugs. And they lasted a little while, but they eventually got out of there because it turns out thugs beat hugs.
You know what's funny?
Every time.
You know what's funny about that? Every now and then, there's a guy by where like my mom and them live when I go and visit. I'd say at least once a quarter. He's out on the side of the street with a sign that says free hugs and stop for hugs. He's an older guy, and it just seems so weird. And like, yeah, something about that just isn't right. You just want random people to come up and hug you. I'm going to go ahead and pass, you know. I was going to say something that probably was going to get us kicked off of the show just getting started back.
I was going to say, we're just coming back. Don't get us kicked off. Of all the people that were going to say something that would get it kicked off, I would not have bet it would have been you.
Yep. I pulled it back.
Well, I mean, that kind of sign was really weird during 2020.
Yeah. What's weird is that's when I first started seeing people do stuff like that. It was like during that whole pandemic time. And then, you know, I guess with so much that was quote unquote going on in the world, people just start doing like free hugs, and it was like, yeah, I'm going to pass.
But they're free.
So Bub Hewlett was the most feared of the Harlem Badmen. So you'll see some stories that say he's 6'8". He wasn't 6'8", but he's 6'1", mm-hmm. Which, you know, in early 1900s, 6'1's Big dude.
A giant.
What's the height of inflation? 6'8 is 1900,
6'1. It's not Yao Ming, but it's like Ben Wallace, you know.
See, bringing the meatheads back in. Nerds, you sit that one out.
It's a solid reference, I promise.
Just for reference, really quick, because I wanted to look at, you know, a 1900s boxing champion, Jack Johnson, who everybody would know, you know, the biggest, meanest man. He was 6 feet, 200 pounds. He was considered a giant, you know. He was considered a, you know, and he was born in around this time, 1878, died in 1946. So just for reference, for somebody that may not get it, Jack Johnson.
Who might actually make another appearance at some point in this episode.
Oh, nice. I was ahead of the game.
DC making inadvertent predictions.
But he's described as broad shoulder with giant fist. He was cocky, but he said he could be polite. He had manners, but he's also frighteningly mean.
Well, so yeah, he's big as fuck, and he was a thug for a living. Yeah, turns out you might not want to mess with him. I would be cocky as fuck, too. Motherfuckers were saying I was 6'8 and I was only 6'1. You think I'm correcting them? Hell no, I'm 6'9. Fuck all you.
He's also described as quick with his fist, but he always had a gun and was quicker to escalate. So, like, he'd beat you up and you'd think, like, oh, maybe I can't fist fight him. I should bring a gun. He was like, oh, I was hoping you would say that.
See, I wasn't even thinking that way. I was thinking, like, sometimes his, like, fist just hurt. He's like, you know what? I ain't even got time for this shit. My knuckles just healed. I ain't even in the mood.
So, yeah, he quickly becomes the most feared man in the neighborhood. And he put together a crew. Like, you'd see it's referred to as the Bub Hewlett Gang or just the Hewlett Gang. But I don't think there's any actual references in time to that. I think it was just kind of like his crew of dudes. And they worked together, like, most of their life. But they weren't, like, an actual gang. Like, I don't think there's any actual reference in time of the Hewlett Gang or the Bub Hewlett Gang. It was just, you know, it's like Tom Petty after the Heartbreakers. He still has a band and shit, but, you know, you just call him Tom Petty.
Hey, that's how you got to do it sometimes.
So wait, was his crew a subset? Because he was officially a Harlem bad guy, right?
That wasn't an actual, that wasn't a gang. That was more of a profession. That's like how people call, say, like,
oh, they just called the thugs from that area just Harlem bag. All right, word.
Yeah, we throw names like that all around all the time nowadays. It's just usually in politics where, like, a group of people, you just throw a name on them and then they're known as that. But, like, it was never anything official. It wasn't a club. You didn't have to pay any dues. There was no membership. You didn't have to get jumped in.
Yeah.
It was just a thing.
So eventually they take control of their own neighborhood and outside thugs no longer terrorize the neighborhood, but Bub had built up a steady business and he needed to keep that going, so he decided to continue providing perfection to local businesses anyways.
That's what we call extortion. So haven't been any trouble around here lately, has it? No, everything's been good. Want to keep it that way, right? Yeah, it's going to cost you about $100.
So he went from the Harlem bad boy to the Black Hand.
That's usually how it works.
Well, I think it's, if you look at it, that's exactly how the mafia works. Over in Sicily, it became a position of honor because it was where there was no government. It was kind of the defunct government. You know what I mean? Like, but yeah, at some point, once you get in the new country and you just need money and you're just like, well, you know what? The first people I'm going to go at is people that know that, you know what I mean? It goes from being like something that's a position of honor to something that's just directly taken from the community. And that's one of the things I think is funny a lot with Bub's stories. You'll see, you'd be like, yep, he's one of the Harlem bad men. He's out there protecting his neighborhood and chasing these people off. And then once all the people are stopped coming, he's like, yeah, but I'm just going to need you to go ahead and keep them checks coming anyways. Like, oh yeah, real Robin Hood.
It turns out he just wanted to fight. That was it. They just gave him the reason for it.
So he builds a nice little extortion empire. He's got his crew. He was a guy that would get arrested a lot, but he always be able to beat stuff. Nobody from the neighborhood would ever testify him against him. Everybody's afraid of him.
He would just bend the bars and get out.
Just Hulk smash through the fucking place.
Yep. The jailer would just go in there. There'd be a bub-sized hole in the wall.
All right, we're going to take a quick smoke break, refill our drinks, and we'll be back in a minute.
Shackles to break out of. They cower, solo but mob them and they crowd us. Spilling in the street with heat like hot lava. Pop bottles, molotovs tossed and rocks follow. Ominous disciples like vipers, they strike quickly. Come at me like an army, I'm tearing you down with me. Spit like the Baron, rulers of bread like Kaiser. Roll with the goal and get beaten like outsiders. These amateur animals swing in the wrong jungle. Climbing the wrong vines mean these lions will snuff you. Concrete wilderness building our own structures. Riding our own. For survival with rivals with throat punches. Sorting them. Court of honor corroded as soon as it was awarded. Celebrations were thwarted before they could be supported. Rolling thunder bombarded them. Flaming dark put a part in them. Separate and disarm them and send the bulls to the parliament. Operation Niagara, Viet Cong on the battle with. Landmines and grenades and flamethrowers to scatter them. Dear mama, this battle is harder than what we thought it'd be. Every part of me scarred, I'll be recognized when they mortar me. It's almost time to run, put on your army helmets now. You're running toward the sun with all your guns, defenses down. Flashes everywhere, the lights create an atmosphere. Water in your lungs, you pray for death, but life is here. You're about to die, face it, you're about to die. Zero sand in your glass, fuck it, you can't even cry. Put a dagger to your neck, just to keep yourself in check. Put a dagger to your neck, just to keep yourself in check. Everybody grab a side as you fight to stay alive. Dancing on a hand grenade so you can die and they survive. Silver bullets in the sky, dropping 7-second death. Scattering the children, run, rub until there's nothing left. Ashes in the water, sons and daughters hold their flags up high. Wallow in the harbor as the military tanks arrive. Penetrate the border with disorder like an animal. Every war has the honor of turning kings into cannibals.
All right, we're back. So around 1921, Bub went to offer protection to a new grocery store. And when he gets there, the guy goes, oh, we're already paying protection. And Bub was like, who are you paying protection to? And the guy's like, that kid out there. And he pointed to a kid that was standing outside leaning on his black Cadillac or his black Lincoln. So Bub's like, that's who you're paying protection to? He's like, hey, I came in. He said, he's the guy that protects. So we worked out a deal. So Bub goes out there and he reads Dude the Riot Act. It turns out the teenager's 16-year-old Bumpy Johnson.
Oh, wow.
And
I just like that back in the day because there are no credentials for this at all. So you could just go into a place where, like, it's kind of like people robbing a bank now. They just hand them a note to do it. Like, back then, be like, hey, you know, I do protection around here, so you have to pay me. Like, you've got grocery stores just like, yeah, I already paid that guy over there. Oh, that guy's not the guy? Fuck, now I got to pay this guy over here. Like, you just walk in and say you do protection, get some payment.
I mean, the guy's got to fight it out at that point in time. If I already pay him, he's my protection. So if you want me to pay you, you got to go fight him because he's protecting me. Right. So at that point in time, it's out of my hands.
Go talk to my protection. He's out there by your car.
You know what? That is the perfect thing for a grocery store guy, because at that point, you're really doing a tryout. Like, they're battling for your business at this point. That's like two insurance agents duking it out for your business. Like, you're going to really let the bigger man win. It's a thug battle.
So, Bumpy, it seems like he kind of hit him with a Jedi mind trick, because Bub went out there ready to fuck him up. He's like, you know who I am? Get off my car. And Bumpy was like, yeah, I know who you are. You're Bub Hewlett. And I, okay, I got off your car, but now you got to get off my block. And Bub is like, dude, I will fuck you up. Harlem's my territory. And Bumpy was like, look, you have all the businesses and everything in the neighborhood, but that wasn't yours. That was brand new, and we beat you to it. So, like, yeah, this might be your block, but that's our store. And Bub eventually was kind of like, I kind of appreciate your moxie, fucking kid. And I mean, people got to come up somehow. So how about we work something out and you keep the store and we'll figure out some kind of long-term partnership.
That's awesome. So he just sovereign nationed him. He's like, no, this could be your country, but this is my little country within your country. He did. He has a dukedom. That's why he just became a duke.
So Bub respected Bumpy's attitude, and he took him under his wing as his protege in the extortion racket. And Bub and Bumpy, they seem to gravitate towards each other the same way Bumpy eventually gravitates to the Stephanie St. Clair. They were all people that at the time just had this attitude that were like, no, I don't give a fuck. I'm not afraid of anybody. I'm not afraid of the mob. I'm not afraid of the white man. I'm not afraid of Stephanie St. Clair. She was like, I don't give a fuck. You think I'm afraid of him because he's a dude? They just all had this real, I don't give a fuck attitude. They all just seemed to click together on that. They were like, you know what? I really appreciate your,
not giving a fuckitude.
It's tough to step up to the biggest boss in the neighborhood when you were a 16-year-old with a teenage gang.
I think that could have really went the other way, like, real quick. That was a pretty big risk.
Well, I think as a business person, right, if you're a business person in anything, if you see somebody with a lot of potential and they show something that you normally don't see, you're probably trying to figure out how to get them on your team, especially if they're young enough for you to groom. So for him to even have that kind of wit and those balls, you know, Bug probably looked at it like, you know what, this kid is a little crazy. I probably can use him. He would be a great enforcer on my team. I would. It's like sports, basketball or something. You go, you know, to a pickup game and it's this kid and he's really good. He's not as good as you, but he's really good. He's going at you and everything with the ball. You're like, man, I need this kid to run a couple games with me. You know, we probably can make a great force. So I think that's how they look at it.
Make partners, not enemies. I like it.
Yeah, recruit them.
So he eventually helps them expand from grocery stores and restaurants to clubs and speakeasies. They become the one and two top extortion. It was Bumpy Johnson and a basically a teenage street gang. And then Bub, who's now in his 30s. I don't know if he ever got married. I don't see a reference to a wife, but he had four kids, three boys and a girl. And he was like a good family dude. By now he's in his 30s. So some of it was probably like, okay, yeah, these kids take some of the side work anyways, take a little bit of this load off or whatever.
It's not too many people back in that time that didn't get married, particularly if you had kids. So I'm guessing he had to have gotten married, but maybe it was one of those things where he kept that whole side of his life private.
So by 1924, the numbers business was huge. And it was like a top employer and moneymaker in Harlem. Like, almost everybody worked for the numbers rackets because it was so much money. They had, like, accountants and some people that were just kind of working in the system. And they became such big operations that they wanted the top security. So they started paying Bub good money to protect their shit. And eventually the numbers rackets get so big that he can't cover them all. And he was the person that originally told Bumpy, what you should do is, you got your extortion thing going, you should start reaching out to these numbers rackets guys and start working security jobs from them. And
so just to put it, like, because we talk about running numbers and doing all this, but this is just like, if the government did it, this is nothing but the lottery and then like the armored truck and security detail that guards the lottery. But because this is back in the day and the lottery's illegal, whatever, this is all illegal shit. But it's the same stuff that goes on today when you see like Loomis trucks and shit. Like, it's lottery money. It's just security guards guarding the lottery money.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. In general, it's like, it sounds crazy when you hear back in the day people pay for protection, but everybody does that today. Not like regular people like us, right? But like all your stars or whoever else, right? They're going out somewhere. They're going to have paid armed security. And the security that they have are usually not nice people, right? If you go to casino, you know, we have casinos here in the Detroit area. You go to a casino and you win a bunch of money, they will have security take you out to your car, right? So, and you have this everywhere, even just something as simple as the club. Clubs have security. And there's usually a bunch of big guys that, you know, aren't the nicest people outside of work, right? So to your point, Duke, you know, is we just made it legal. That's all. You know, took an illegal hustle and made it legal.
Like, if this was nowadays, I bet you a lot of these people might even go get their CDL and go get a security job, like, the legal way. There's no certification program back then and shit. So, yeah. So far, I mean, it seems pretty on the up and up. I mean, it's a little bit of shady shit, but I got no problem with them. Like, yeah, they're running numbers, got the lottery going. Let's do some security. Fuck it.
So, Bub, he taught him the ins and outs of working protection for numbers bankers. He helped them with the proper introductions. And then Bumpy ended up working for some of the biggest policy guys, like Alex Pompez, who went on to become like a big guy in baseball. And Stephanie St. Clair, she's the one that she took him under his wing also, but Bub had kind of taught him how to be a thug, how to work extortion, how to get the connections, how to do the street part. And then she taught him like how to dress right, how to talk and act your, you know, act a certain way, to be diplomatic. You know, she's like, look, you're super smart. You don't have to punch everybody first. Bub has to punch everybody first. You don't got to do that. But this racket makes them both successful.
Now, real quick, is there any word to like how smart Bub was? Like, was he a big dumb meathead, just brute guy, and Bumpy was more of a slick, like he was the mouth of the operation sort of deal? Because, I mean, sometimes a big dude that's quick to punch people, it could be because that's just the quickest way, or it could be because they're not that bright and it's the only way they know.
I don't think it was that he was that not that bright. It was just his top weapon. You know what I mean? He had the intimidation. They said he was kind of smooth when he wanted to be. So, I mean, the only picture I have of him later is looking pretty fucking dapper. So I don't know. I think it might've just been his specialty. I mean, he did run a successful operation for a significant amount of time. So I think Bumpy Johnson was just specifically pretty slick. That's why like him and Lucky Luciano got along. They were both real good at chess. They were good at the Game of Thrones, the Tyrion Lannister part of the game.
That's what I'm saying. I didn't mean so much smart, like he was an idiot, because, I mean, he was, you know, the top guy to run all that business. You got to be smart. I mean, more like, I guess some people, they're just too much into the violent, too much into the thug style to get to the sophisticated, more businessman. Like you said, like Luciano sitting together at the boardroom. Bub was probably just much more at the booth or in the back alleys than in a boardroom sort of a dude.
Yeah, I think some people, too, just kind of have a way with words. Even going back to, like, that was my point of saying when they met, you know, Bumpy just kind of being witty or slick or whatever, right? And, you know, as you're touching on Lucky Luciano, I don't think anybody could have pulled off bringing the families and the whole thing together the way Lucky Luciano did it, other than a person of kind of his moxie. It's not simply a power thing. It's a communication and a how to talk to people and a wittiness where you can pull certain things together, especially when you're dealing with nothing but outlaws and criminals that they don't have to follow a rule for shit. So when somebody amongst them can put enough reason into them to follow rules, that's a person with a special, I'll just say, language almost, right? The way that they get things across. And sometimes you just can see it in people and they have it.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, even, I mean, with Luciano in particular, he was like a bub sort of dude. He was real violent. He was a thug guy. And then who was it that took him under the wing? And Rothstein. Was it Rothstein? Yeah, that refined him and did that. No, I get that about Bumpy and Luciano, because obviously we've had that, covered them on the show or whatever. I was thinking of more along the lines of why it was they didn't necessarily see that in Bub. Like, why she's taken Bumpy under her wing and not Bub, even though so far Bub's been the one in charge. But it's just that. That's why I was sort of getting at, like, was he a dumb dumb? Did he not have that factor to him? But it probably was that. He got his up and comings of being a big dude with his fists. He wasn't an idiot. He just didn't have that I'm a sit at a boardroom sort of thing.
Well, some people too, like, if you look at, going back to Luciano, look at somebody like Al Capone or whatever. You got some people that they're so good at what they do, and everything is a little bit more brute force. It's not about how smart they are, right? And I know you've already preferenced and said it a different way, but it would be really hard for you to have taken a Al Capone under your wing. He doesn't want to be under your wing. He's Al fucking Capone, right? And so a lot of times when you have these guys that just, they're the muscle for so long, they're not just putting in work and then outsmarting people. They're the muscle and they build an organization. I just think they're not the right people to bring under your wing. I think you see the same thing in like jobs and stuff. A lot of times the person that is the absolute best at a certain job and they just do, that's not the person that's going into management and getting groomed to take over anything. They're going to keep
the young, slick hotshot.
Yeah, they want the young guy that's like willing to learn and he's showing some, you know, some different things, some wit. He can see different angles. That's who they're going to groom.
Yeah.
A lot of times when people talk about them, they'll say that they were rivals. I think there's kind of like, I think the phrase is frenemies, but they were seldom on the same team.
Well, DC brought something up at the end there too, is an age thing. You want the up-and-comer young guy to mentor. You don't want the older 30-year-old with four kids to mentor. It's like, no, he's already come up. And that could be it. It could be just a generational thing. Bub is way more old school. He came up. There was no like extortion in his neighborhood till he made it a thing, kind of thing. So he's still old school. Bumpy's doing it the new way. So they're just bumping heads because it's just that old man. These kids today, they don't do it like we did it. You know what I mean?
That's right. Damn.
And you get that with all of it. I mean, the way Luciano changed the game in the mob, the way Al Capone did the same thing in Chicago, like, it's just a generational thing.
Bub is the Mustache Pete's of Harlem.
Yeah.
So one time that they were on the same side, there was an incident where a pimp named Yellow Charleston.
Do you have to say the whole name like a pimp? Yep. Name
say the whole name. A pimp named Yellow Charleston.
So a pimp named Yellow Charleston is at one of Bumpy's crews, a guy named Finley's craps game, and he loses $800. And, he gets in an argument, and Yellow Charleston ends up shooting and killing another player. And then he pulls his gun on Bumpy's boy, but his gun jams, and he takes off. So then he goes out on the street, and he runs into one of Bub's friends, a guy named Baron Williams, who was standing out in front of his club. And Baron Williams, he was in his 60s. He was like a real popular guy in the neighborhood, and he was like a philanthropist. And he had financed both Jack Johnson and a bunch of the Negro League teams when they were coming through the neighborhood. He was like a big part of the Harlem Renaissance. And he's standing in front of his club, and Yellow Charleston runs up, and he's like, "Hey, I just shot this dude. I need $100 so I can get out of here." And
Dave, that's a weird thing to just bring up on somebody out of nowhere. Like, damn, all right. I got Baron a dollar.
Williams. Well, that's what Baron Williams said. And he's like, "Hey, get out of here, man. I've got $100 for you." And they get in an argument, and Baron Williams goes to walk away. And Yellow Charleston shot him in the back 3 times and killed him.
Wow. Ballpark, yeah. What year was this?
So this would be about 26.
26. Okay. Let me see. I needed to see what $800 worth. That sounds like a lot of money. So, okay. Originally, I guessed it was around 1915. Which was more money, but in 1926, this was about $13,000 he lost.
So that's a bummer at the craps game, man. That's
Well, find out how much just $100 is, because that's how much he just shot this guy in the back
for.
That's
true. Let's see.
And not even to get the $100, it was just because the guy's like, "No, I'm not giving you $100 because you shot someone." Like, it's the weirdest like prize game you ever came up with.
About $1,700. Yeah. So he got. So that's like somebody coming up to you randomly. "Hey, can I get $1,700? I just shot this guy. Got to leave." You're like, "What? Get out of here, son." "Okay, I'll shoot you too."
I was gonna say no, but since you shot someone, I'm definitely gonna say no to that.
So,
but what was their relationship? Because I take it they knew each other. The guy Ray, you want to run up to a stranger and ask for $100?
One guy owns a club, the other guy's a pimp. I would imagine that they probably just have a casual business relationship. You know, if the guy's got his toes in the underworld, I mean, he knows he's a guy that's got some money.
I'm just saying that's one hell of a request to just bring up on someone,
right? I'm assuming he knows.
It sounds like it was worth it for him to just give up the money.
Yeah.
Should have gave him $100.
Yeah.
A pimp named Yellow Charleston shows up and asks for $100. You give a pimp named Yellow Charleston $100.
That's wild.
So Bumpy is like, "Well, I'm going to get him because he ruined my boy's craps game," and then tried to shoot him. And Bub was like, "Nah, but he murdered my boy, the big money man in the neighborhood." So I decided
murder Trump's robbery, I think. That's the rules.
That was pretty much the one time that we know of for sure that they worked together. Because where they were partners, they always did their own separate thing. But pimp named Yellow Charleston is the first time they ever did anything together. And Yellow Charleston's body is never found or anything. He just disappeared. And neither Bub or Bumpy would ever disclose what happened outside of claiming that they got the job taken care of.
Hey, it was taken care of. Yeah. What else do we need to know?
That's like the perfect crime, because the crime itself was so quiet that nobody knows nothing, but it was such a public case that it's still like down in history of like, yeah, this motherfucker crossed them and they both just took care of it. So it's public enough where people know they take care of it, but it was the perfect murder because nobody knows what the fuck happened.
You know, that was back in the good old days where you can just, you know, take somebody out and everybody doesn't have to know about it, you know? The good old days.
Yeah.
It's not on social media. Nobody live streamed it.
Hey, it's me, live from the hit.
Now the days are fucking just drill rap, like they're just gonna drop a whole album about the murder.
You know? You didn't talk about your ops beforehand.
Yeah. Motherfuckers getting tattooed of their crime on their chest and shit.
You gotta cross them out on the chest.
Yeah. Let's document this as much as possible. I'm gonna carve my social security number into his forehead before I shoot him.
So that's the end of part one of the Bub Hewlett story.
Man, it feels good to be a bad guy. telling stories that bring the underworld to life. Gangsters, mobsters, hustlers, monsters, stars of the conversation as we sip on our libations. So come and share some laughs, it's true crime with a twist. Every episode's a banger, you don't want to miss. Infamous criminal masterminds with fascinating lies, blurring lies between truth and lies. We talk about killers with mob ties, extortionists, wise guys, crack jokes, have a few drinks. It's a good time, made men who made men tremble for a living. May have ended up in prison, but they still made a killing, yeah. We keep it real gangster up on this side. Some good fellas, but no more Mr. Nice Guy. Chronoline criminal minds, we are street certified. Say hello to the bad guy. Say hello to the bad guy, bad guy. Say hello to the bad guy, bad guy. Say hello to the bad guy, we're street certified. Say hello to the bad guy.